All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Top of test, Vav Amud Aleph, two lines down. Gufa Amud Rabbi Yehuda Amr Shmua. Yudchas Gazra B'Yudchas Nechleku. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmua that in 18 cases they made a gzera, and in 18 cases they had a machlokas. Right, so remember, this is going back to the Mishnah. Let's go back to the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that they went up to the attic of Rabbi Hananya ben Chizkia ben Garo, machlokas Beishama Beisila, a number of different cases. And they argued in 18 cases, and it seems to be that Beis Shammai won over Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, on one hand, it says, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, that in Yudchas, in 18 cases, they made a gzeira, and in 18 cases, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel disagreed. V'atanyu hoshvu. Abu, we have another price that says that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agreed about these 18 enactments, to which the Gemara answers, Bo bayom nechloku. On that day, when they were having the discussion, there was a big machlok, yes? Ulamachar hoshvu. But the next day, Beis Hillel came around. Nachar Hushvu. Rashi says, Shechazuba and Beis Hillel. The next day, Beis Hillel came around. Gufa, Amar Afuna. Begimu Makomos Nechleku Shammai Behel. So if you remember again yesterday, I will say, so we learned, the Gemara wanted to suggest that some of the Machloksin that we were talking about in this Mishnah, some of the Yudchas Gzeros, for example, Yadayim and others, might have been Machlokis Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says that couldn't be, because the Mishnah says there are 18 machlokes in between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, whereas Shammai and Hillel themselves only disagreed in three cases. Now the Gemara is going to discuss which cases Shammai and Hillel disagreed with. So the Gemara says the following: Shammai Omer Mikav Chalo, VeHillel Omer Mikavayim. So both of the first machlokes they had is how much dough do you have to have in order to have to take challah? So Shammai said you have to go ahead and take challah from a kav, bless you. And Hillel said you need two kavim. So just to give you an idea, approximately a kav is the volume of 24 eggs. So Shammai says one kav, Hillel says two kavim, bless you. The Chacham Omecham say, Loki Divreze, Veloki Divreze. The Chachamim say, no, Halacha L'maisa, we don't follow either of those. Ela kav umechtsa chayiv bechala. Rather, how much dough do you have to be chayiv in chala? 1.5 kavim. Mishehigdilu hamidos. When the measurements got larger. Now I will say, what does that mean? If you take a look at Rashi here, it's actually right across in the Gemara, right across in Rashi. Mishigdilu hamidos himidas tzipori sheotfim shesus al Yerushalmis. See, interestingly enough, when the seat of rabbinic leadership went to Tzipori, Tzipori's in the north, is after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So in Tzipori, they reevaluated some of these measurements. So it's clear that measurements change over time. So, I'm sorry? After Yavne went to Tzipori. So the Gemara points out over here, they increased the measurement, says Rashi, by a sixth. So when they went ahead, Mishigdilu Hamidos, Amru, Chameshes Revoim Kemach, Chayiv Bechala. So they said that five Revoim of Kemach are Chayiv and Chala. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Hey Peturin, Hey Va'od Chayovin. Rabbi Yossi says five Revoim of Kemach are Chayiv and Chala, are Pater and Chala. Five and a little bit are Chayiv and Chala. So we'll say that's the first machlokes Hillel and Shammai, in terms of how much dough you need in order to be Chayiv in Chala. Fine. Second machlokes, Idoch. Hillel Omer, Melohin Maim Shu'uvim Psulim. So we'll say it's actually very interesting. So now, in second Machlokes, is Machlokes about mikvos. So we'll say the halacha is like this. A mikvah has to be a minimum of 40 sa'ah. Once you have 40 sa'ah, now it's 40 sa'ah of rainwater. So after you have 40 sa'ah, even if you subsequently introduce non-mikvah waters into that mixture, let's go for now with the assumption that that does not invalidate the mikvah. Obviously, if you have too much of it or certain types of liquids, that might change the appearance of the mikvah, and that might be a little bit different. But for our purposes today, once you have 40 sa'ah, that locks in the kashrus of the mikvah, and introducing, let's say, what we'd call mayim she'uvin, drawn water, would not invalidate the mikvah. The shailin now is, let's say you have a little bit less than 40 sa'ah of rainwater, then how much additional drawn water will invalidate the mikvah? This is machlokis number two between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. V'idoch, Hillel Omer, Melohin Mayim Shuvin. Hillel says that a hin of drawn water. Now, just to give you the idea, so a hin is three kavin. A hin is three kavin. So we said before that the kav is 24 eggs. So what does that make it? 72. Right, so the volume of 72 eggs. Okay, so that's a hin. We'll see why. Hin, by the way, if you've never heard that word before, you'll see why in just a little bit, because it's not normally used in measurements. So one hin is three kavin. One hin is three kavin. So I'm going to give you some of these measurements. We're not going to get into it. But so far, kav is 24 eggs. One hin is three kavin. I wrote down a couple of these in my... Good, we'll get to... Well, I'll give you another... So let me give you one other measurement for this. A hin is also equal to 12 lug. 12 lug. That's very helpful, right? A lug is about 3 to 6 liters. A lug is somewhere... I know that's not helpful. Right? 3 to 6 liters. Okay, so a lug is... We're not getting... I'm just giving you this information. You'll plug it in when you do your chazara tonight. Right? Might be on the test, right? So good. So you have again. So hin. I'll give you two measurements. You can either do it in terms of kavin, right? So one hin is three kavin, 20. Right, a kav is 24 eggs. One hin is 12 lug. Lug being somewhere in the range of machlokis what a lug is, 3 to 6 liters. So Beishama. So Ishilel says melohin ma'im shuvin. If you have a hin of drawn water, that will invalidate the mikvah. Bolson is a mikvah. So the Gemara doesn't ask it, but the Gemara has the question: why is Hillel speaking in terms of hin when hin? Why doesn't he speak in terms of lug? Right, lug or kav? Those are measurements used. Hin we don't. The Gemara says shechayiv adon lor b'loshan rabo, because apparently Hillel, when he received this teaching from his Rebbe, Hillel's Rebbeim were Shmaya and Avtalion. Right, remember the previous set of Zugos were told Shmaya and Avtalion. So when he learned it from Shmaya and Avtalion, this was the lashon that he got it from. So the Gemara says, you see from here also that when you receive a teaching from your Rebbe, you should convey it in the wording in which you heard it from your Rebbe. Shmaya says Tisha Kabin, 9 Kav. The Chachamim say, no, you mean 9 kav of drawn water would go ahead and invalidate a mikvah that does not have 40 saw. The Chachamim say, no, we don't think the halacha is like either of them. But interestingly enough, the Chachamim don't put forward their own shita. For some reason, they say the halacha doesn't follow Hillel or Shammai. Ad shebo beis gardim mishar ashba shebiushan. So listen to this on both sides. So what happened? The Chachamim didn't really have a full answer until two Gardoim. Gardoim are weavers. Weavers, right? So weavers who lived in Shara Ashba, the dung gate, right, in Yerushalayim. And they came along, Ve'idu mishum Shmaya v'Avtalion. They gave over testimony in the name of Shmaya v'Avtalion. Sheshlosha lugin mayim she'uvin posan as a mikvah. That 3 lug of drawn water invalidate the mikvah. And the rabbis accepted their word. Take a look at Rashi Rabos. It's very interesting. Shnei gardai mishara ashbos. Rashi says, b'meseches edyos mifarish lama husker shem umnasa v'shem komam. So the Gemara Meseches Edyos, this one, the Mishnah Meseches Edyos discusses, why does the Gemara tell us what they did for a living and where they lived? I mean, who cares? Who cares if they were weavers who lived by the dung gate? What does it matter to us? So Rashi says something very profound. He says, Lomar, shelo yimna adam atzmei beis hamedrash. To teach you that a person should never stay away from the beis hamedrash. Why? She'in lecha umnos pechusa megardi. There is no profession that was considered to be more lowly than being a weaver. She'in ma'amidin mimeno lo koin velo koin godo lo melech. That it was considered such a lowly profession that you would not be able to appoint a person as Kohen Gadol if he worked as a weaver, or a person as a king if he worked as a weaver. Kidarmina b'kiddushin ve'ein shar b'Yerushalayim pachos mishara ashpos. And the most undesirable neighborhood in Jerusalem was living by the dung gate. Right. Ve'chriu ve'edusan kol chach me'yisra. And amazingly enough, yet these two men who came forward, their testimony is what established halacha. So the point the Gemara is making is, lest you think that because of what you do for a living or because of where you live, you can't acquire greatness in Torah, It's not true. Even weavers from the dung gate can become the greatest gedolim in Torah. Okay, so Rabbi said that's machlokis number two. So machlokis number two is how much drawn water invalidates a mikvah. The idach and the last machlokis.
Was that a mikvah that had 40 sa?
No, did not have 40 sa. Did not have, had a little bit less than 40 sa. Because once you have 40 sa, even if you introduce mayim shuvin, the mikvah is still fine. Mikvah is still fine. The idach, third machlokis, the idach. Shammai Omer Kol Hanoshim Dayan Shai. Zabosai, this is actually a little bit of Chazara, because we did need that in the last cycle, not so long ago. So the Gemara says, the last machlokis is, Kol Hanoshim Dayan Shaiton, Vehilel Omer Mipkid Lepkid Afil Yom Harbe. Zabosai, okay, a little bit of background with this. So the halacha is, Rashi says, Kol Hanoshim Haroos Dam. If a woman has a discharge of blood, menstrual blood. So the shaila now is like this, Rabbosai. If a woman, let's say a woman does a bedika, she does an internal examination, and she finds blood, she finds menstrual blood. So the question is, at what point do we assume that she's tamei from? So do we say that, look, she had a cheskas tara until the point that she found the blood, and therefore she's only tamei from this point forward, or do we say no, that there is a strong possibility that even though she found the blood now, the blood was there at some pre-existing time as well. Now the truth is, it doesn't really have a ramification for our Hilchos Nida, as we observe it today. The ramification more is for Hilchos Taros. That remember, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when a woman was a Nida, it was much rather than she just going to be with her husband, it was about that she couldn't touch certain Kodesh items, Trumos, Maestros, Karbanos. So let's say over the course of the last period of time, she touched one of these items. What is the status of this particular item? So the Gemara records this Machlokes. Shammai Omer, Kol Hanashim Dayan Shaitan. Shammai says, all women, literally Dayan Shaitan, their hour is enough. Which is another way of saying that when does she become Tamei? From the moment that she discovers the blood. There's no retroactive tuma. Her status until now is that she's tahor, dayon shaiton. It is enough to say that she's tameya from this shah, from this moment going forward. The Hillel Omer, Hillel says, mi pekida le pekida v'afil yom harbe. Hillel says, no. Interestingly enough, she is tahor, or she's considered to be tameya, all the way back to her last bedika. Let me illustrate this. Let's say, for argument's sake, she finds blood, she sees blood on Thursday, and it happens to be she did another examination on Monday. So Hillel says, let's say the one on Monday was clean. So Hillel says, well, the last known time that she was Tahora was when? Was Monday. Therefore, says Hillel, anything between Monday and Thursday, we assume that she was Tameya. Right? So she her Tahor status only goes back to the last time we knew that she was Tahor, but in between that Bedika and now, she's considered retroactively Tameya. The Chacham and the Chacham say, lo ki divrei zeh, v'lo ki divrei zeh. The Chacham say, we don't hold like either of these. Ela, me'es le'es ayyidei mipekida le'pekida, or mipekida le'pekida, me'ma'it ayyidei me'es le'es. So the Chacham create almost like a little bit of a hybrid model. The Chachamim say, the greatest duration for retroactive Tumah that we're going to apply is 24 hours. We will never make a woman Tameya retroactively more than 24 hours. But it's going to be the lesser of the two time frames. Either the time between now and her last Bedika, or 24 hours. So for argument's sake, if she did her last Bedika, I don't know, we'll call it 12 hours ago, and it was totally fine, so then we only extend her Tumah retroactively to 12 hours ago. But if she did her last Bedika 5 days ago, then we'll only extend her Tumah retroactively when? For the last 24 hours. So it's a little bit of a hybrid model, taking the lesser of either the time between the last bedika and now, or within the last 24 hours. So I will say, these are the three machlokes. It's amazing. We think, when we say Hillel and Shammai, we think machlokes, machlokes, machlokes. The Gemara says, Hillel and Shammai only argued in three cases. How much dough you have to have for challah, how much drawn water invalidates a mikvah, and what is the status or what is the window of retroactive tumah for a woman who becomes a nida. Those are the only cases of machlokes, Hillel and Shammai. It's the Talmidim. You know, the Gemara says that Mishirabu ha-Talmidim nasilu kishtei toros, the Gemara says. There were such machlokes between the students of Hillel and Shammai that literally there was a period of time where in Klai Yisrael looked like there were two different toros. There was a Torah of Shammai, there was a Torah of Hillel. But amazing that the Rebbe's only had a machlokes in three cases. The Gemara says Sulo, that's it, there are only three cases. Vaha'ika, Hillel, Omer Lislo, Slismoch, Vashamai, Omer Shal Lismoch. There's another case. What's the other case, Rebbe? Say Smicha. The halacha is that you could bring karbanos on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now, Yom Tov, you could bring more karbanos. You could bring your Shalmei Chagiga. So the question is, Smicha. The halacha is that before you go ahead and you bring a carbon, you have to lean on the animal. The shayla is, can you do that on Yom Tov or not? Machlok yisei Shalmei Sona, you'd be tempted to say no, because the truth is, there's a rabbinic gezeira that you're not allowed to ride an animal on Shabbos, lest you go ahead and break off a branch to use to hit the animal. So the truth is, that's extended to include any kind of ishtamshus, any kind of usage of an animal. Leaning on the animal is also called ishtamshus, but the fundamental machlokes is, do you need to say, tekef l'smicha shchita, or tekef l'shchita smicha? Do you need to have smicha immediately before the shchita or not? So that's the machlokes v'sham v'sol. So the Gemara says, there's a fourth case where they disagree. Kik amar Rav Huna, hecha deleka plukta derabusa b'hadayhu. So the Gemara says, no. What machloksim are we recording? We're only recording the machloksim where it's just between Hillel and Shammai. But when there are other rabbanim involved, hecha deleka pluksa derabusa, only ukit Rashi. Rashi says, ki kam Rav Huna hecha deleka pluksa derabusa, shalosh mekomo shom Rav Huna lo nechleku bahen rabosein harishonim. There are many other times that Hillel and Shammai disagree, but those machloksim are earlier machloksim. When the Gemara says there are three times that Hillel and Shammai disagree, it means that halacha lemaisa, those were three machloksim that they, just the two of them, they were the first ones to grapple with this machlokis. But smicha, like for example, Rashi says, smicha says already Yosi ad Yoezer, Yosi ben Yoezer, Hillel. There are already earlier sages that dispute that. We're not including that in this list. The Gemara says, but what about the following? He's vahayikra abotzer legat. Shammai omer hochsher, vehillel omer lo hochsher. So we'll say it's another machlokes. The other machlokes is that if you are collecting grapes for the wine press and liquid oozes out of the grapes, do the grapes become hochsher l'tumah or not? Remember, we spoke about this yesterday a little bit, a couple of days, chiyutan, we learned about this. That was a couple of days ago, I think. Right? So that in order for a food item to become receptive to tumah, it has to become wet. It has to become wet with one of the seven liquids. But interestingly enough, under normal circumstances, it only becomes wet when, we had it 2 days ago, right? We had it with the overturned plate on the wall, and the rain runs off. So, but generally, in order to become receptive to tumah, saloch lemaisa, you have to want it. You have to desire the item to become wet. So the Gemara says that if you're collecting grapes for the press, Shammai says, Hukshur l'tumah. Rashi, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Shammai omer hukshuru, v'yayin hanidlaf mehen al-gabeyan. From the juice that oozes out, literally the wine that oozes out from the grapes. The avagav da azali ibud la'arish eshoseis min asalim, gezer shami yibatsrena bekupas mizuvefes kidnafarish l'kameh. So the Gemara is going to discuss why Shammai holds the way they hold, but Shammai ultimately holds that halacha l'maisa, that liquid that oozes from inside the grapes makes the grapes receptive to tumah, and Hillel says lo hochsher. So the Gemara says, so we see that there's a fourth case where Hillel and Shammai have a machlokes. To which the Gemara answers, bar mine, don't count this case. Why? Bar mine dahi, the hasam kashosik le Hillel le Shammai. Because you know what happened about in that case? Hillel came around and agreed with Shammai. So although they had a machlokes initially, Hillel then later on agrees. So the Gemara is only counting cases where what? Where the machlokes continues. But in a case where they had an original machlokes and Hillel agrees with Shammai, we don't count that. Weiter. Yosi ben Yoezer ish tzureida. Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim. Gozru tuma al eretz ha'am v'aklei zechuchis. So remember again, the Gemara quoted a brisa yesterday, that the two Yosis, we recognize these Yosis from Pirkei Avos. Right, so the two Yosis, they decreed, Gozer Tumal Eretz Ha'am, we spoke about this yesterday, that because in the lands outside of Eretz Yisrael, they often were not careful in marking graves. So because of that, there was a real chashash of Tumah wherever you went. So the two Yosis were Gozer, that land, that earth, from Eretz Ha'amim is Metame, and Al Klei Zechuchis, and that glass becomes Tameh as well. V'ha Rabbanan V'shmonim Shana Gozer. So the Gemara says, one second. you make it sound like Yossi and your Ezra decreed this about the Eretz Ha'amim. This was actually done by the rabbis. It's interesting, calls them the rabbis of Shmonim Shana. This refers to the rabbinic body that existed 80 years before the Chorban, 80 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, Migda'am Rav Kahana, Kishachol Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Sholchulo. When Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi got sick, his students sent him the following message. Rebbe, Emor lanu beiz u'gimel dvarim, sha'amart alana mishum avicha. It's amazing, I was talking about this before, that you always find this in the Gemara, that when a Rebbe, a Tanan Amor, was getting sick, so the students would always come around the bedside. In this case, you're sending a letter to the Rebbe. Because remember, in the days when Torah Shebaal Peh was Baal Peh, when the Rebbe died, his Torah went with him. So there was this push, when you knew that the Rebbe was going to die, to extract as much information as you could from the Rebbe. So they sent Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, you taught us two or three things in the name of your father, please tell us them now, you know, parentheses, before you die. So the Gemara says the following. Shemar Tal Mishul, Shalach Lahem, Kach Amar Abba, this is what my father said. Kuf Pei Shana Ad Shlochara Vabayis, Parshta Malchus Arasha Al Yisrael. 180 years before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the evil kingdom, spread its grip on the Jewish people. So Rashi points out this is a reference to Rome. Peishana Achlo Charav Abayis, 80 years before the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, Gozru Tuma Al Eretz Ha'amim. The rabbis decreed that the lands outside of Eretz Yisrael are Tomei. Va'al Klei Zechuchis, and they also decreed regarding the fact that glass becomes tami. So I will say now, Rabbi Yishmael Riosi is saying that it's the rabbis of 80 years prior to the Korban that made these two gzeros. Mem shana atchel char v'bayis, 40 years before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, gal salah Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas Hagozis, which is the chamber of hewn stone in the Beis Hamikdash, the Yoshva Bechanuyos, and it sat literally in the storefronts, which actually means, remember we spoke about the steps on the Har HaBayis, where people often would conduct business, so they moved from the Lishkas HaGozis literally to the storefronts. We'll discuss why. L'may Hilcha, so why is that? What does that mean that they went to the storefronts? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Baradimi Lomar Shelo Danu Dine Knasos, is to teach us that they did not adjudicate any matters concerning financial penalties. So the Gemara says, Dine Knasso Sakadaitcha, why are not financial penalties? Ela Ema Shelo Danu Dine Nefashos. No, what it means is they did not adjudicate capital cases. Now, both in order to adjudicate capital cases, number one, it has to be the Sanhedrin HaGadol, that's 71 judges, and number two, they have to be sitting in the Lishkas HaGozis. They have to be sitting in the chamber of hewn stone in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara relates that there was such a breakdown of society within the years leading up to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, that if they were going to start judging capital cases, they'd be executing left and right. The Sanhedrin made a conscious decision to leave the chamber of hewn stone at that point in time and stopped adjudicating capital cases. That's what it means. So they went to the storefronts. They were able to adjudicate all the other cases, but not capital cases. So the Gemara says the fine. B'chi tema. So what's the point of here? So you see, the Brisa clearly tells us that it wasn't the two Yossis that made the gzeira of Eretz Ha'amim, that the lands of the nations of the world are tame and glass, but rather it was the rabbis who lived 80 years before the Chorban. So the Gemara says, V'chi tema, b'pei shana nami in hu havu. So maybe you'll say that Yossi ben Yo'ezer and Yossi ben Yochanan lived at that same time, 80 years before the Chorban. Not true. V'atanya, Hillel v'Shimon, Gamliel v'Shimon, Nagu nisi'usan lifnei abayis me'ashana. So I will say, remember, this was a four-generation nisi'us. You had Hillel, that's Hillel. Hillel had a son, Shimon. Shimon had a son, Gamliel. And Gamliel had a son, Shimon. That's Rabbi Gamliel number one. Rabbi Gamliel number two is in Yavne after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So, and they were the Nisim for the 100 years before the Beis HaMikdash. And V'ilu Yossi ben Yochanan, Yossi ben Yo'ezer, Ish Sreda, V'Yossi ben Yochanan, Havu Kad Mituva. And we know about say that the two Yossis lived before Hillel. So if the two Yossis lived before Hillel, then what? Then they're for sure not part of the rabbinic body 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So what do you see about this? We're left with a contradiction. who were the ones who instituted the gzeira on Eretz Ha'amim, and who were the ones who instituted the gzeira on glass. The brises, right? The brises that we read yesterday said there was the two Yosis. Brises that we just read now says it was the rabbis who lived 80 years before the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. Ella, also inhu gazer agusha lisrof ve'avira veloklom. So Gemara says it was a two-part gzeira. When the two Yosis legislated against the lands of the what we'll call the Eretz Ha'amim, so what did they say? They said that, let's say, Truma comes in contact with the dirt of Eretz Ha'amim, Lisrof, then indeed the Truma has to be burned. Truma has to be burned. Okay, look at Rashi for just a moment. Gozer Agusha Lisrof, Truma Hanoga'as Begusha Afar. If you have Truma that actually touches a clod of earth from Eretz Ha'amim, you have to burn it. Va'avira Veloklum. But they did not legislate anything regarding the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim. Va'asu Rabbanan de Peishana, and the rabbis who lived in the 80 years before the Churban, Gozer Avira Litlos, they went ahead and they said the following. If you bring Truma even into the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, Litlos, what does Litlos mean? Litlos means we've had this concept before, that it's suspended. Right? Not that it's suspended in the air, that the status of the truma is suspended. Namely, you can't eat it, but you also can't actively destroy it. L'meimra, d'chada gzeirasa hava l'sreifa, is that to say that in the original form of this takan of Eretz Ha'amim, the rabbis immediately legislated that if truma comes in contact with the dirt of Eretz Ha'amim, that the truma is immediately burned. V'ha'amar ilfa yadayim tchilasim gzeira l'sreifa. So yet Ilfa said the following, that when it comes to yadayim, we actually said this yesterday, that yadayim, the gzeira about hands, right, that ultimately, remember we saw that one of the things that is a sheni, hands are unwashed hands, are considered to be a sheni, and can make the truma a shlishi. So Ilfa said that yadayim tchilasim gzeira l'sreifa. From the beginning of the time that the rabbis legislated regarding Yadayin, the rule was that unwashed hands that touched Truma would automatically result in an obligation to burn the Truma. Yadayim hu detchilas gzeiras in the Sreifa, ha midi achrini lo. It's only Yadayim whose original gzeira resulted in Sreifa and the burning of Truma, but other items not. We'll say, what does this mean? That very often in these rabbinic gzeiros, there is a progression of the gzeira. So what Ilfa's saying is that Yadayim was the only gzeira where from its inception, the rule was that if you touched Truma with unwashed hands, you had to burn the Truma. What the Gemara is being medayik from that is that in other cases, the original rabbinic enactment wasn't that it would result in burning of Truma. The original rabbinic enactment was of lesser severity, and then it progressed to burning of Truma. That's a kasha for us. Because the way the Gemara just made it sound is that when the two Yosis came along and legislated regarding Eretz Ha'amim, the rule was that if you had Truma that came in contact with dirt of Eretz Ha'amim, you would burn the Truma. And then the rabbis who lived 80 years before the Churban came along and added in that the Avir, the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, also is Metami the Truma, not as severe, but you're totally the Truma. So the Gemara says, but one second, it's only Yadayim that in their original gzeira resulted in the sreifa and the burning of Truma, nothing else. Ella, therefore, says the Gemara, here's how it works. Ella, asa inhu, gazur agusha litlos, va'avira veloklum. Rather, says the Gemara worked like this. When the two Yosis came along, sa'alocha l'maisa, they said the following, that if you have Truma that comes in contact with a clod of earth from Eretz Ha'amim, litlos, what do you do with that truma? It's suspended. So you can't eat it, you can't burn it, you just let it sit there and rot. Va'avira veloklom. But they didn't legislate anything regarding the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim. Va'asu rabbanim de peishana, and the rabbis lived 80 years before the Churban, gazer agusha lisrof, va'avira litlos. They came along and what? And changed or modified the gzeir and said no. If you have truma that comes in contact with a cloud of earth of Eretz Ha'amim, you literally burn it. And the avir, if it comes in the airspace, litlos. If it comes in the airspace, then tlio, you suspend the truma. Rashi just points out over here, I just want to say one thing about the avir. If you go back to the second line in Rashi, Rashi says, avira litlos, truma hanechnesas ba'avira. This is talking about truma that comes into the airspace of Eretz Amim. Ve'ein davar mafsik bein taim. Kegon shida prusa mitachtel. So, but there's nothing interrupting or there's nothing interposing between the truma and the ground. That's the idea of avir. So let's say you have, his example is you have, let's say it's in a wagon and the wagon has an opening on the bottom. That's the airspace concept. It's not really important for us right now, but just clarifying that case. So we'll say, what comes out according to this discussion is that the gzera of Eretz Amim was a two-stage gzera. And both brises therefore are correct. The brisa that says that it was the two yosis, according to this approach, it was the two yosis who said that halacha l'maisa, if you have truma that comes in contact with the actual physical earth of Eretz Amim, your tola, you suspend that truma, but airspace of Eretz Amim does nothing. And the rabbis who lived 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash are the ones who put a little bit more teeth in it and said, no, if the truma comes in contact with the earth, with the gush of Eretz Ha'amim, you have to burn the truma, and avir is tola, and avir you suspend it. So the Gemara says, but one second. Va'akati ba'usha gazer. So the Gemara says, but, look at Rashi, va'akati agusha lisof ba'usha gazer. But really, the Gemara is now asking, was it the two Yosis, or was it the rabbis who lived 80 years before the Churban? It seems to me that it was in Usha that they went ahead and decreed about Eretz Am. Now, both remember, Usha, we have many takanos that were made in Usha. Usha's after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, I will say, now we have three different time periods in which this gezeirah is being made. We have the two Yosis, who are a good 150 years before, maybe even 200 years, before, not 150 years, before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. We now have, right, the rabbis who lived 80 years before the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara wants to suggest that it was a takana in Usha as well. This nan, avov sveikos sarpen asatruma. On six sveikos, right, we go ahead and we burn truma. What does that mean? So the Gemara says, a sofek beis hapras. If you have a sofek beis hapras, I will say, sofek beis hapras is a field in which there was known to be a kever. There was known to be a grave, but the field was plowed over. So there's a double sofek. The sofek number one is you don't know where the grave is, and there's a strong possibility that what? That the grave was actually disturbed by the plowing, and that there may be bone fragments in different parts of the field. Now remember, a bone fragment conveys tumah even if it's tiny, right? Size of a barley kernel, even if it's tiny. So once a grave is plowed over and there's a possibility that this bone fragment spread all over, there's a possibility then that you become tameh. So the halacha is that if, let's say, you were to go ahead and walk into a beis hapras with truma, you would go ahead and burn the truma as a result of it. Va'al safek ofra haba me'eretz ha'amim. Now, again, it's not a safek if you enter the field. The field, the beis hapras itself, is a suffix. That's what it means when we burn on six seikos. The field itself, maybe you didn't walk over a grave, and maybe you did walk over a bone fragment. It's a suffix. But nevertheless, you would burn shuma if you brought it into that field. Next, al suffix afra bame eretz ha'amim. Same idea. If you brought in dirt, right? If you have dirt from Eretz Ha'amim, this is what we just said before, if you have dirt from Eretz Ha'amim, and your truma comes in contact with that dirt is also suffix. Maybe there's a kind of bone fragment in it, maybe there was a grave in it, and if our loch l'maisi burn the truma, va'al safek big de ama aretz. Similarly, if you have truma, right, if you have truma that came in contact with the clothing of an ama aretz, right, there's an issue over there. Rashi points out that the ama aretz sometimes were not so careful with tumah, and Rashi actually points out that it could be that his clothing even contracted tumah from his wife who was in Nida. So because of all of that, if truma were to come in contact with this clothing, then halach lamaisi would burn the truma. Va'al safek kelim hanim tsoim. Similarly, if you found kelim, and you don't know to whom the kelim belong, it's hasa that the kelim themselves were tameim. Va'al safek harokin, or if the truma comes in contact with roke, literally is saliva. Right, you're not sure where the saliva emanated from, or al sofek me raglayim adam shekinegin me raglay behema, or you found urine which is human urine next to animal urine. So in all of these cases, avadai magon sofek tumasan surfin esatruma. In all of these cases, if the truma definitely came in contact with any of these items, you would burn the truma. So Rabbi Osai, what's the point of this whole brisa for us? The point of this brisa is the offer haba me'eretz ha'amim. Right? So offer haba me'eretz ha'amim is the case of dirt that's coming from outside of Eretz Yisrael, which makes it sound like what? That they're legislating, that this halacha is being forged in Usha. Right? So now we're saying that in Usha they decided that earth that comes from Eretz Amim is Tameh, it's a Suffolk Tumah, but it's enough of a Suffolk Tumah to result in burning of Truma. So now we'll say, so which one is it? Were the two Yossis Gozerit? Were the rabbis 80 years before the Churban Gozerit? Or was it Nigzar in Usha? To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Af al Safek Magoon Birshus Hayochid Sarfin. Rabbi Yossi says that even if you have a Safek about if you touch them in Birshus Hayochid, you're sorry. I will say what that has to do is in general, the Safek Tumah is dealt with in different ways. If it's a Safek Tumah Birshus Harabin, Safek Tumah Birshus Harabin generally is dealt with Lakula. We assume that the item is not Tameh. Safek Tumah Birshus Hayochid. If you have a doubt about Tumah in an individual domain, then that's dealt with in a stricter fashion. That's learned out from Isha Sota. So Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, because remember what the Brisa just said is, if you have Truma that definitely touched any of these items, you burn the Truma. Rabbi Yossi says, not only that, but if you have a Sofek, if the Truma touched these items, if the Truma resulted in Rishus Hayochid, excuse me, if the Sofek resulted in Rishus Hayochid, you would burn the Truma. The Chachamim, the Chachamim say, Birshus Hayochid Tolin, Birshus Harabim Tahorin. The Chachamim say, no, if the Sofek occurred in Rishus Hayochid, you would suspend the Truma, but if it happened in Rishus Harabim, you would go ahead and declare it tar. Ver Amar Ula, and Ula said, Elu Vav Sfekos Beusha Hiskinu, right? And Ula said that these six enactments, these Vav Sfekos, were instituted in Usha, which makes it sound like what? That where did the Gzeira of Eretz Ha'amim come from? It came from Usha. So now we're stuck with three competing brisos. Was it the two Yossis? Was it the rabbis 80 years before the Churban? Or ultimately, was it Usha? Ela asa inhu gazer agusha litlos v'avir v'lokum. So the Rabbi Gemara says, here's how it worked. The two Yossis came along and they said the following. Gusha litlos avir v'lokum. The original enactment by the two Yossis was that if Truma comes in contact with earth from Eretz Ha'amim, you're Tola, you suspend the Truma. Right? If it comes in contact with the airspace, it doesn't have any negative ramification on the Truma. The rabbis, 80 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, came along and decreed that what? That Aloch Lamaisa, both contact with the earth of Eretz Ha'amim as well as the airspace, suspends the Truma. And in Usha they came along and they said, Gazer Agusha Lisrof, Vavira Kidikoi Koi. And in Usha they went ahead and they left alone Avir. They said Avir is only Tola, right? If it comes in contact with the airspace, it suspends the Truma. But if Truma comes in contact with the actual physical earth of Eretz Amim, then what? Then you burn it. So we'll say, so all three, so it began with the two Yossis, was modified by the Rabban and 80 years prior to Eretz Yisrael, and the final formulation of the Halacha was made in Usha. Klis Chuchis. My taima gazra b'hurabban and tumah. So we'll say, now the second part of the two Yossis is that they decreed about glass, that glass becomes tameh. The Rabbos say, of course, the midoraisa glass doesn't become tameh because glass isn't one of the materials listed in the Torah. But nevertheless, the two Yossis say that midrabana becomes tameh. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Eish Lakish. Why? Why did the rabbis go ahead and legislate regarding klis chuchis? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Eish Lakish. Hoil utchilas briyasan minachol shavin rabbanan kekliheres. Because since glass is originally made from sand, right? The imagery made from sand. Therefore, because it comes from the earth, the rabbis gave it a status like klicheres, like an earthenware vessel, right? Even though it's not earthenware, because it has the same origins as earthenware, it's treated just like earthenware is susceptible to tumah, so too glass is susceptible to tumah. In which the Gemara says, but then if that's the case, elamei ata lo tehelahen tara b'mikva. If that's the case, Rabbi Yossi, that the reason you're making glass tameh is because it's like earthenware, so you should say, just like earthenware can't be kasher. Right? You can't kasher earthenware, so you shouldn't be able to kasher glass either. Alama tnan, why then does it state, ve'elu chotzitzin bekelim, hazefes v'hamor. But yet the Mishnah says, the Mishnah's talking about things that pose a chatzitza problem. Rabbi Yossi, when you go ahead and you immerse an item in a mikvah, the truth is, whether you immerse an item or you immerse a person, there can't be anything interrupting between the surface of the item or the person and the waters of the mikvah. So here the Mishnah discusses the things that go ahead and can pose a chatzitza problem for glass, which would indicate to us what? that glass can be purified. That glass can be purified in a mikvah. But I don't understand. If the whole reason you're telling me it can become tummy is because it's like an earthenware vessel, then make it like an earthenware vessel the whole way. Just like an earthenware vessel can't be made tahor, so to the glass can't. Why does the Mishnah then talk about the things that are a chatzitza for glass, which would then indicate that glass can be kashered? To which the Gemara says, no. Hachal ma'askin, what are we dealing with over here? Kigon shenikvu v'hitif l'sochan evers. A very interesting case. The case that the Mishnah is dealing with over here, where glass that can be kashered, is a case of glass that got a hole in it. Right? Rashi says, kigon shenikvu v'tiaru mitoras klicheres, the klicheres shvirasa mitarasa. So what's that? Interestingly enough, there is one way that you can be mitar, that you can purify klicheres. And how is that? If you break it. Now remember, you don't have to totally break it. You just have to render it unusable. Once it's no longer usable as a kli, it loses its identity as a kli. Once it loses its identity as a kli, as a utensil, then halocha lemaisa, it loses its tamis. We saw this in Brachos. Right? We saw this in Brachos. That, remember, again, people would go ahead and use kalim until they had a hole as big as a pomegranate. Because at least until the hole was small enough, you could use it for something. Once the hole was mamish, as big as a pomegranate, you couldn't use it for anything. It lost its status as a kli. So you want to say, what's the case over here? A glass utensil that got a hole in it. And what did you plug the hole with? You plugged the hole with metal. Well, literally, Aver's lead. But you plugged the hole with metal. So why is that important for us? Rabbi Meir he, the Amar, hakol holich achar hanaimit. And this reflects the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So me, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is when the Mishnah talks about tovaling, being mitahir, purifying a glass utensil, we're talking about a glass utensil that got a hole in it, lost its status essentially as a utensil, was plugged back up with metal. And it reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir holds, hakol holich achar hamaimit. Rabbi Meir holds that when you have a utensil, the identity of the utensil is established by the item that holds the utensil together. Disanya, klis chuchis shenikvu, if you have a glass utensil that got a hole in it, vehitif lesochan aver, and you put lead into it, amrav shuming amniel, Rabbi Meir mitame, vechachamim mitarin. So Rabbi Meir holds that it's tamay, Yerucham say that it's tahar. So we'll say, we'll pick up with this case, mamish, tomorrow, but just understand, this is a fascinating, so let me just end this off over here. What the Gemara therefore is suggesting is that maybe indeed glass is still like earthenware. Glass is still like earthenware, but aloch lemaisa, the case where they're talking about being mitahir the glass, you can do that. Why? Because it's not a real glass case. Why is it not a real glass case? Because it had a hole, it was plugged with metal, and it reflects the view of Rabbi Meir that when you have something that is allowing the utensil to be usable, it's the material that makes it usable that determines the identity of the kli. So in this case, although it could be that, 90% of it is going to be glass, but if it's that little piece of metal filler that makes it usable, then it has the status of a metal utensil. We'll pick up with this tomorrow in your session.